Now let's go ahead and get our Future Tuesday on with Dr. and Mrs. Future right here on AM 1080 KSCO.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome to Future Tuesday. Well, we got a show for you today. The second hour is going to be the first hour. The first hour, the second hour, for starters.
That sounds simple.
Yeah, we're putting the news and space news and coronavirus news and all that good stuff after our guests.
Who are here with us in the studio. Very excited to have.
Yes, you've met one of them before. Laura,
hello.
Laura Bishop.
Nice to be here.
The director of What Is Erotic.
Yes.
Valentine's Day approaches.
The 418 project. Yeah. And the current smash hit, What Is Erotic.
Thank you. Yeah, we did have a sellout first weekend, so we're excited to be locking and loading for Valentine's Day.
And you're pretty close to sold out for Valentine's Day this Friday night, but you do have a show Thursday and Saturday as well.
Yeah, we want to encourage people to consider coming on Thursday night. Yeah.
That's the night.
And by attending the show, possibly. Yeah, we definitely do.
And that's when Mrs. Future here is speaking.
Yes. Yes.
That's right.
I would normally love to be there on Thursday night, but I myself will be performing at Michael's on Main with the Tell Me More Ensemble show. So
she's going to be talking about
autobiographical storytelling.
Yeah, how she met me.
Well, hopefully you guys can maybe get down there and see Sun on Thursday night, and then still have two nights to go see What Is Erotic.
So. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
You were inspired to invite a guest to our show.
Tell us about your
thinking along these lines here.
So just a word or two, if the audience is not familiar, What Is Erotic is in its 15th season, and it is a community source dance and theater performance that benefits a nonprofit in downtown. And what's special about it is that we wait for a theme to arise from a public call to participants.
Yeah, so it's the community's sense.
Yeah, it's the community's. So we really are making performance art from really what's arising in the collective. And when we had our informational meeting, I have to say that the piece that felt most intriguing and exciting was a performer whose name is Lana Light, and she said, "I want to do a piece on the mating habits of acorn woodpeckers." And so I've learned a lot more about her, and she's brought so much talent and depth to the show, so I'm excited that she can join me here today.
Welcome, Lana. Lana Light.
Huh? Yeah, thank you. It's great to be here.
Excellent. So you're performing in the show?
Yes, I'll be performing in the show, and I actually have a kind of a three-piece act that I've developed for it, where it opens up discussing ecosexuality in general.
Which we'll be talking about a little bit more in this.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so it's something that I very much identify with for myself, as this movement of how do we go from Earth as mother that we can take from to Earth as lover. And when you have a lover, you must give to your lover. You must care for your lover. Mm. Or
the next,
what's the relationship going to be like?
From the Earth is my mother to Earth is my lover.
Right. To really embrace that in. So that's kind of the overall expression and intent behind the piece that I'm sharing at What Is Erotic. And I'm doing it through the lens of how can we learn more about our local ecology that's right in our own backyards. For me, this idea of shifting towards Earth as lover, it can be on this really meta level of looking global, but can it also be this very personal level of what's the nature that's in us and around us and right under my own feet, right in this room?
Now, when you're talking about love, I assume you're talking about the myriad forms of love that exist, from touch to making love, I imagine, the whole range.
Yes, where do you draw the line when it comes to defining ecosexualities?
Or is there one? Or is that something we've made up?
I think we've made that line up.
So are you in the school that everything's erotic, everything's sex in some
absolutely.
Way?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I am absolutely of the mindset that everything is erotic, that eroticism is the push and pull that creates life and the universe and everything that is here. For me, that is the most fundamental aspect of existence. I can't look at a flower and not see that as a sexual being, because it is. That is the reproductive being of that plant. And it is beautiful for that, and it is beautiful for the sensations that I can feel by looking at it, by touching it, by imagining my own sensual sexual being touching the sensual sexual being of a flower.
Do you really think as sentient monkeys we can make love to flowers?
Why not?
Well, I suppose it depends on...
Is it a two-way street?
I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, pollen
is,
we're, as we're inhaling all around, we bring in pollen into our bodies, and we eat fruit that we then help spread that seed for that plant, and we're actually helping to nurture it through our feces and helping to make it grow. There are very much all kinds of ways in which we are actively participating in the reproductive acts of other beings
so
all around us.
Participating in the creature's ability to reproduce.
If I can add as well, maybe you're familiar with a novel called The Overstory. It won the Pulitzer Prize last year. And you may be familiar with a concept called tree bathing, which has been sort of popularized in Japan. But it's the idea that when a person goes out into nature and is sort of in the field of trees, that there's a change in our state toward a more receptive, relaxed state. And there's a way that not only are humans affecting nature, but that we're being affected by nature.
That's
and
an
I would
interactive
suggest
process,
in so. Some possibly erotic ways.
And in that instance, what is erotic?
Indeed, what is? It's a question we ask all the time. It's such a personal question.
Now, do you think the other creatures in this universe experience this?
Well, I know the woodpeckers in Lana's piece definitely do.
Definitely. And that's what's really fascinating about this is that I find, so part of my personal life, my work, what I do, I'm a nature connection mentor is one of the many jobs I have. I'm also a licensed professional civil engineer. So there's, you know, very different things under my
book. Really covered
my
bases.
How old are you, may I ask, Lana?
I'm 31.
Wow. Well, yeah, you look like you're in your early 20s. It's amazing.
Yes, I do nature connection mentoring. And what were we just on right before that?
Tree bathing?
Tree bathing.
Well, and also your woodpecker.
The woodpeckers. That
the woodpeckers.
Woodpeckers. So through nature connection mentoring, part of what I'm aiming for with that is to connect us with our local ecology and our local species that are here, because I really do feel the more we learn from them, the more we observe, the more we can start to see that maybe they do experience sensuality and sexuality and expansive states of emotion. They may have much more complex ways of being and understanding and existing than we're able to think of from our current state of thinking of us as separate and different from nature and it's divided.
I mean, they don't think the way we think.
They might not think the same way we think, but that doesn't mean that they aren't also sentient and feeling and sensing and have some depth of emotion and experience that may be beyond what we're able to understand. It may be very different from how we experience life and how we experience things, but it doesn't mean it can't be there and be magic.
So how do you connect with them if they're so different and yet so intimate at the same time?
So here's where it's interesting.
Let's take that question a little bit after the break, because we're just about to take a little break.
Sounds good.
Great. Right. Thank you.
Keep it in mind. This is the Dr. Future Show, and we will be back right after this.
Welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. We're talking to Lana Light and Laura Bishop about ecosexuality. And I was just about to ask, how do you really connect with nature? What's the real connect? Can you give us some ideas of that? Like, for example, during the break, we talked about anthropomorphism is okay. Is that a way to connect, anthropomorphic?
Yeah, so I tend to take two different avenues. I mean, many avenues to connect with nature, but two come to mind. And one is anthropomorphizing, but before I get to that, another is just this deep meditation with nature and these sit spots, and is a practice that I tend to teach of just dropping in on the land and listening and opening our senses. That's simple. Can open a lot more than you may realize.
It seems like a lot of meditation, but then maybe that's the point of a lot of meditations, is to connect with nature like that.
Mm-hmm. I could add as well, so anthropomorphizing literally means to change something into a person. So in my opinion, if you're anthropomorphizing nature, all you're doing is you're seeing what's similar to nature as to you. So you're simply shifting your focus. So instead of seeing nature as something that's different, you're seeing it as something that's the same.
So that's maybe why a lot of cultures see the weather as a god, for example, or the different forms of weather.
Maybe. But I mean, in terms of is anthropomorphizing good or bad? If the question is, well, how do I connect to nature and how can nature have an impact on me? Do I share some characteristics with nature? Right. Does nature share some characteristics with me?
And maybe the point of that is to feel comfortable, and you can communicate then when you're comfortable.
Yeah, and you can hear those signals, or you can receive
otherwise
that.
You might see it because you might think of it as some more fearful space.
During the break, we're talking about tree bathing and this whole idea of they've done these sort of studies where people who just go for a walk in the trees, their brain chemistry shifts, their breathing, their respiration shifts, their receptivity, their relaxation levels shift. There's a way to measure that. Maybe it's even more heightened if we're aware.
Sympathetic resonance.
Yeah, and so this is actually a key part of the piece that I have in our show, What is Erotic, is how do we see ourselves in the acorn woodpeckers that are all around us? How do we connect at that level? And so it's really fascinating because acorn woodpeckers, just to give a little brief ecology lesson of what my piece is about.
They're a local woodpecker?
Local woodpecker species. They're all around Santa Cruz County, all around oak woodlands. They're the ones that if you see holes in an oak tree and there's just a ton of little acorns everywhere, that's them. And they live in these colonies where they'll be anywhere. Sometimes they're monogamous and there's one male, one female. Most of the time, there might be two females, three females, up to seven males within one breeding pod. Hmm. And they'll interbreed all within them. There's no hierarchy. If a female starts laying before the other females, they'll actually destroy the egg until all females lay together.
So they have these colonies.
Colonies.
They're polyamorous with each other?
Essentially, only within this core breeding group.
Polyfidelitous, then.
Right. They don't interact outside of that community.
Yeah, that's their gang.
That's their gang. Yeah. That's their group. Okay. And then they have, in their colony, a lot of non-breeding members that assist with collecting acorns. They'll assist with the young, but they won't exchange any reproductive fluids. They won't breed. And there's very clear rules of who breeds and who doesn't. And yet the entire colony still have these rituals that they engage in where it looks as though they're mimicking sex acts. And they'll mimic between male and male birds, between male and female birds, between breeders and non-breeders. They don't seem to have this distinction around engaging in an act that looks like their sexual reproductive act, but in which they exchange no fluids.
Well, maybe it's like an emotional exchange.
So they do the dance without the chemistry.
Correct.
Right.
Without the actual...
They do it with others outside of their identity cluster.
And maybe the chemistry's there. Who knows what the neurological, like, brain chemistry, like, hormonal pieces that could exist, but there's not the reproductive biology piece.
Right.
That part doesn't happen.
So what's your theory, Doctor?
I mean, I think that they are bonding with one another. I think it's a way they have an act that creates intimacy and trust and unites them in their colony, and that they know they're going to support each other. They know they're going to tend to these granaries that are their food supply. They know they're going to tend to their young.
Do they do that within their own little polyfidelis cluster?
Right. Only within their colony.
Both, not just the physical act, but also just the mental act or the emotional bonding.
Right. And it's only when a breeding member die, if all the male breeding members in a colony die, only then will they bring in members from a neighboring colony. They won't replace it with a non-breeding member from within their colony because genetic diversity is important within an ecological
system.
Maybe
they just don't think they're cute.
Maybe they just don't think they're cute. I don't know. Maybe. They need a little more, you know, spice and pizzazz and something interesting. They're like, I've seen all these people in my colony too much.
I don't want to be spoiler, but can I talk a little bit about what happens on stage? So this is a little bit of a story that the audience goes on, the journey that you go on if you come to the show. There's lots of other things that happen in the show. There's dancing, stand-up, and all kinds of stuff.
Sure, but in this case.
In this situation, a couple of gangs of woodpeckers, they're in these awesome costumes. They enter, and you remember the old The West Side Story.
Oh, yeah.
The Sharks and the Jets. There's a little, like, woodpecker fracas that happens in it. You don't want to miss it. You really don't want to miss that.
So there are rival gangs of woodpeckers?
Yeah, so for the piece, I take the audience on an ecosexual exploration through Poganip. We go on a voyage into some oak trees in Poganip, and we encounter different woodpeckers and
different creatures. Also
and a Cooper's hawk comes in, and there's also a beautiful oak tree.
Wow.
Yeah.
And this is based on some real experiences, eh?
This is my life. This is how I get it.
I'm not making the news. I'm just telling the news.
Just sharing it.
Well, it's interesting because the closest I've heard of this in the anthropomorphic world is my wife used to belong to a Haight-Ashbury commune where they did have this kind of structure of polyfidelitous clusters. And that was the first time that I had heard of that in humans. So to see that it's actually normal in some of our local creatures is pretty interesting.
That right there is... That's the goal, is how do we build that kind of relationship and see, oh, there's things in my life that are happening in a bird species that exists outside of here.
And we can look at it.
And we can look at and observe and see, maybe I can learn something in my life on my relational patterns that is going to feel more nourishing for me based on learning about these woodpeckers.
Maybe that would be my totem, you know, my connection.
And or at least maybe now I'm going to care enough to want to protect the oak woodlands where these woodpeckers live and where they survive and where they keep their young and kin. Because now I've received something from them that's nourishing in my life.
Yes.
Will I not then want to have reciprocity and give back and tend for something for their life and give nourishment for them?
How can you help them in whatever way you can being
tending to our oak woodlands, which is a huge thing in this area. Sudden oak death is a big problem in our local ecology, and there are programs out there. For example, Sudden Oak Life is one I would really recommend going and taking a look at. There are things out trying to bring back and revitalize the health of our oak woodlands by bringing back a healthy relationship with fire. There's mushroom inoculation projects that are helping to bring back our mycelial web that will help promote growth and health in our forests. There are all kinds of projects out there that are about really creating vital, healthy ecosystems. And that's what these woodpeckers need. If we really care and love for them and care about them, that's what we will do.
A thing that I could add is that it's occurring to me. So we're choosing to check out a family of acorn woodpeckers and what they do. And I think that so many of us feel isolated these days, and we feel like, oh, no one understands me or no one has the experience that I do. And so being able to witness and understand something that maybe is very touching and meaningful to people helps them feel more connected. That's what it's all about.
You know, I'm kind of curious if there was a moment when, since you had an engineering background, which is really, seems like it's not really integrated in the natural world necessarily. It's very much in the world of inventing machine type things or being in an abstract structural awareness of things, which maybe you can observe in nature. But I'm curious, did you ever have a transformational experience where you went, wow, nature, it's not all these other things, it's the rest of the story or something like that?
Well, so actually, I think everything is nature. I think me as an engineer is nature. I think this table in front of me is nature. I think this microphone I'm speaking to is nature, because us as humans, we are nature. Therefore, the creations we bring into this world are nature. And I may tap in and observe that there are certain consequences that come from certain creations we've brought that maybe I don't desire for some other reason because of these other effects. But that doesn't mean it's not also nature. So that, for me, there was a period where I felt very divided in my engineering life and engineering career and this piece of me that is very deep nature connected. It felt not integrated and not resonant. But as I've come to see that I am nature and everything, therefore, that I create is nature, which is the same of every other human that exists on this planet, that engineering mind is no longer feels as separate. It doesn't feel like the schizophrenic two different sides to me. It's no... Civil engineering and how we build our societies and how we manage our waste and how we bring in our water, how we build our roads, that is how we create the human ecosystem, and that is nature.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. I got a picture sent in by one of our listeners. I want to know if this is anthropocentric.
Oh, that's so great.
If you choose to look at it as such, then I mean, that's a very sexual flower.
It's beautiful. A little bit of a very sexy flower.
What kind of flower is that, Al?
I don't know, but it says Shutterstock. No, Shutterstock. No, that's the name of the company. You got it.
Shuttercock.
It looks like that, though.
Well, there's Amorphallus giganteum. Yeah. Amorphallus giganteum is a flower. I think that's the genus and species
name. Take a closer look.
And it literally means like misshapen penis giant misshapen penis flower is what the scientific name of this flower
means. This is a real flower,
though. This is a real flower, and it's huge, and it looks like a giant misshapen phallus. Like,
wow.
And
that's, like this that's picture that he just it. Showed you.
Yeah, but this other one's like 8 feet tall. Right. So
the image says penis flower images.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's known as a penis flower image. I would say that definitely it adheres to that description.
Yeah.
And it kind of looks like a pine cone, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
And on like a hibiscus at the bottom. And
I just love this concept that the scientific names even can acknowledge that this looks like a giant misshapen penis. And I mean, like, the scientific community, the people that are naming this, acknowledge that there is an anthropomorphizing of it. There is a recognition, like, yeah, I'm seeing myself in this flower.
Yeah. This is great. All right, folks. So listen, we're almost at the end of the interview here, and I want to remind you to go to What Is Erotic.
Oh, we're going to take questions in a second.
I misunderstood. I thought you guys were just here for the first half hour. I'm so glad.
If we can take a break and I can check in, I might be able to stay for that. Yeah.
Oh, could you?
All right. Meanwhile, we're off to this break. And don't forget about What Is Erotic this weekend, and we'll be right back.
And we're back with Lana Light and Laura Bishop from the What Is Erotic crew. Now, okay, we've got you guys for another 15 minutes before you have to go. In that time, I'd like to ask you some of the more unusual forms of ecosexuality that you've heard about or you've seen in your research.
Okay.
And maybe stuff maybe we can even observe locally, some of them. Like the woodpeckers is quite fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Fungus, for example.
Oh,
mycelium.
Yes. Fantastic fungi.
Within a single species of mycelium, there can be up to 36,000 different reproductive types.
Why do you think they call them fungus?
Right? They're having a lot of fun. We only have really two.
Mostly.
We're pretty binary, it seems, in terms of at least how to reproduce.
And combinations thereof, right? All the,
But fungus have 36,000.
Well, how is it, I mean, like what? Like what's, I understand like they're the digesting their stomachs on their outside of their body, but how do they have sex? I mean, what's the...
They digest their environment.
So I just learned this fact like a week ago, so I haven't done a lot of research into it. It is still to be researched, but I'm told it's in their hyphae. So from a spore, you can produce hyphae of mycelium, which can grow in mycelial web, but will never produce a mushroom. Until that hyphae connects with another hyphae from the same species, but of a different reproductive type. And when they link, now they can create mushrooms.
Wow.
And so that hyphae has 29,999 other opportunities, like other types it could find that it can link.
It's like having different orifices, huh?
Yeah.
Those crazy fungus.
All of which are fertile.
Fertile. And whales.
Yeah.
Whales. Orca whales.
Yeah, what about the orcas?
Yeah, they've been
so. Orca whales are matriarchal by their social pods, and they are, other than humans, one of the longest species to live post-menopause for the females. So it's the older females that actually teach the pubescent males how to properly court a female orca.
Wow.
Because there's no risk of pregnancy. I mean, that's just the story I have.
They have their postmenopausal.
It's safe sex.
Orcas have safe sex with the teenagers.
Really. I think we should be doing more of that in the human realm.
And they'll teach how to properly, like, approach
the
female.
I would think they'd call it cougars.
No, we should maybe be calling cougars orcas.
Orcas.
Right.
That's real. Now that's respect for your elders. Wow. So that's the whales, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And the dolphins, I understand, are somewhat interesting, too.
Yeah, they seem to be quite promiscuous. From what we could tell, they certainly have sex for pleasure, not just reproductive purposes. But I have a feeling that a lot of other species might also be doing that, and we've just somehow able to be attuned more easily with dolphins, so we've observed it more quickly with dolphins.
So you think there's you think there's a natural state for us humans, or do you think we've learned the strategies of monogamy for survival reasons?
I think that we're probably a lot like the acorn woodpeckers, where sometimes they're monogamous and there's one male and one female, and that's what works for that pair. And sometimes they want two males and one female, and sometimes they want two females and one male, and sometimes...
A lot of individual.
They don't want to breed, you know?
We've got the whole range here. Huh?
Got all kinds of different flavors in the human experience, and they're all beautiful, and they're all natural.
I'm curious if there's anything that you find that is sexual that is not being expressed as love. You're kind of including that everything that we do is nature and that's all connection, and I'm going towards love there, but I'm just wondering if there is a different aspect to it that you're aware of.
Yes. So lately I've been doing kickboxing classes.
Uh-huh.
And when I go kickboxing and I'm like punching this bag, I'm punching out unattuned relational behaviors, because I very much do believe that there's an attunement we can have to one another where then there's consent and we know that we're engaging in this and there's reciprocity and it feels healthy and clean. And then there's when it's not attuned and there's not consent and there's not full autonomy of both beings that are engaging in any kind of act, whether it's sexual, whether it's just a conversation, whatever it is, when there's not full autonomy to be fully expressive and fully in yourself, it's impossible to have a real attunement, I think.
Mm.
And so I see this a lot right now of subtle stripping, especially women, but not only women, but of people's autonomy to really feel liberated and free in the expression of their bodies and feel safe to express a dissenting opinion potentially in a conversation, to really feel safe to express their individual uniqueness. If there's not that safety of autonomy to have that and still feel belonging in our communities, in our world, we can't have attunement and we can't have this really free-flowing, loving sexual connection, or not even just sexual, just any relation.
Hmm. So the criteria then that makes it loving is that there's personal autonomy and that there's consent and that there's not a peer pressure that forces a person to shut down their own preferences.
Right, right. And that there's still a knowing of belonging and a sense of belonging, even if there's difference in our unique expressions and the words we share.
Okay.
I asked this question last week as well, but I think it's relevant now. Seduction, isn't that a negotiation of boundaries that happens in real time?
Yeah.
So permission is tied into seduction in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Can I speak to that?
Yeah.
So I think there's the older model is power over, power under. The newer model is power with. So if seduction is an invitation to create power with, then that's an attunement that maybe Lana was talking about. If it's maybe a power over, power under thing called seduction, then it's something very different.
That's a different game.
That might be a
playing.
Non-consensual thing. Mm-hmm. So is it power over or is it power with?
Yeah, so you had to look at your own behavior and see which game you're playing.
You got it.
Yeah, okay, thanks, Laura. That's an interesting insight.
And I think it can be challenging to really pick up on and feel and attune to in ourselves, like especially for those of us who feel that a lot of our autonomy has been stripped, potentially over our lifetime, over generations, over so many things, to disentangle within ourselves in the seduction process, for example. Is what I'm feeling and attuning to my own unique desire? Do I know what my own unique desires are? Do I feel safe in being able to express my own unique desires? Have I felt lots of layers of shame on expressing myself as a sexual being, and therefore I don't feel autonomy in that expression?
Yeah.
So it can be really subtle and nuanced in the seduction process. And I think that's where it's really important, especially those who have historically had a greater sense of power, to really slow down and listen and make space for those who've had less of that sense of power to really know that they're safe and have autonomous expression and are fully accepted and belong in that. It's really important for those who've had power to acknowledge that.
I want to make a plug for the show. As a follow-up to that, because I think that we do attempt to really put on stage a wide variety of perspectives, and we talked about this last week, we're very interested in consent culture, and so things are changing really quick really quickly right now. And I feel personally extremely excited about the invitation to invite more autonomy and to be more relaxed in ourselves and to feel ourselves. But I think, again, one of the big social values of the show is that we put it all right on stage for you to decide. Like, no one else is going to decide. You get to come and you get to see and you get to decide and have a conversation. My partner and I were having a conversation about this last night. We're like, oh my gosh, the show, like, we're involved in the show, and it's making us talk about what is erotic to us, what's true for us.
What you're are you broaching a particular topic this year yourself in the show, Laura?
I am not on stage this year. We had so many people come out.
That's so rare. We
decided that we really needed to commit to make room for new voices. So we decided that anybody who'd been in the show multiple times wouldn't be on stage this year to make room. So there you go.
Wow. Interesting.
I didn't know that was why.
Well, we
made a big surge of interest this year, so which is awesome.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So, I got to ask you, Lana, am I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
Do you have a boyfriend? where you've been through this dance for a while yourself. I mean, you're 31. You must have been through a few relationships by now.
Sure, yeah. And I've dated men. I've dated women. I've dated people that are trans and non-binary.
Gotcha.
And
so you've
feel
gone through
fairly,
the whole route,
And it goes to this topic of autonomy. You know, I feel incredibly fortunate that I came from a household where sex was genuinely a sex-positive household where we really could talk about these things.
Right, and you said good communication with your parents.
Really good communication with my parents, and just felt very
siblings,
safe
too.
There. And also with my younger brother. And I remember my father told me when I was 12 to burn through men like matches, which there's like one context that could be taken from that's really like, okay, maybe you want to like
he's
be a little softer
about
with
him,
people. But at the same time, for me, that's given me such a higher state of autonomy and power over my own sexual identity. And what I've read into that my father didn't necessarily say, but how I've taken it is, don't let yourself get attached to a man too soon and then lose your autonomy and lose your own personal fire by trying to tend to that relationship. If that relationship's not something that fuels you, just burn through it. Like, let it go. Let it go.
Don't stay in getting wounded and forgetting about that aspect of life. Keep trying.
Yet it speaks of a great wisdom in that I assume your father and your mother were actually very in love with each other because you seem like somebody who came from a very loving home.
Yeah, and even though they're no longer together now, they're both remarried and they go on double dates together, and there's a very loving, you know, there's been a real acknowledgement that conflict engagement and resolution is an important part of creating loving community. That's been part of my household. So
that's amazing to be brought up that way.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is really something. Well, this has been just really great, you guys. Why don't we take the last minute here and once again, let's plug the show.
Thank you.
Yes, go ahead, Laura, give us a...
So please, I encourage you to visit the418project.org and you will find the link to the show. We are our closing weekend. What is erotic? Mm-hmm. Our closing weekend is this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and curtain is at 8, and we encourage you, every single dollar from the show benefits the nonprofit, the 418 Project, directly, so... Please check it out. There's lots of information on there. You can learn more about it. Please come out.
And on Friday, both my parents and both of their partners will be at the show.
Just
how open my family is to all of this.
That's
we'll all be there.
That's great. Thank you, Lana Lye, Laura Bishop, 418 Project. What is erotic? A great way to spend your Valentine's Day or Thursday, Friday, or Saturday night.
Saturday's the last night?
Correct. Saturday's the closing night.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. We'll be right back.